You know more because you start your day with Andrew McKay, the Pensacola Morning News, 5 till 9 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Good morning, 7:38 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. If that doesn't make you happy on a Friday, I mean, I just can't help. Joining us now by phone, Alex Andrade. He is our state representative for District 2, the southern half of Escambia County, plus Gulf Breeze and Pensacola Beach. Alex, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew, or should I call you Big Papa?
ECUA letter. Tell people what you guys are asking for and why you're asking for it.
Well, Senator Broxton last year requested the Office of Public Counsel, which is essentially the lawyer for the people who represents them before the Public Service Commission with utilities. Senator Broxton asked them to review some operations from the ECUA. Currently, the ECUA doesn't answer to the Public Service Commission, so they've never really interacted with them before. But the Office of Public Counsel came back and identified kind of two big questions or things that if they were subject to Public Service Commission oversight, the public counsel would look into, that being how they code some of their expenses versus, long-term or operating expenses, and, how they, retire and replace some of their equipment. And public counsel said there's a possibility that ECUA could save some money if they changed how they retired their equipment. So we asked the ECUA for a response to that report, and I look forward to seeing what the ECUA says. They're supposed to respond by November 30th.
So this is a case where it's a constitutionally elected office, right, the ECUA board. So they answer to the governor, not to the Public Service Commission, which you, of course, you know and you pointed out. But what sort of authority is there for this investigation? Or is this the kind of thing where, if ECUA decides not to cooperate, well, there is a governor, is that kind of, where do we go with this?
Well, so one, they're not a constitutionally elected office. They were created by a special act by legislators. They answer to the people of Escambia County. Each board member's district actually overlays their county commission districts. Obviously the governor has the ability to remove anyone for misfeasance, malfeasance, or nonfeasance. The ECUA has undergone a lot of changes in the past few years in response to a lot of negative attention and investigations that have occurred in the past. And that's resulted in a new executive director, new lawyers for the ECUA, and that's also resulted in new board members. So, I don't view the ECUA as the ECUA of the past. But that doesn't mean you can turn a battleship 180 degrees overnight. So this is a growing process. We gotta work with our partners, our locally elected officials who represent the same constituents that we do. We gotta work with them in good faith and understand where they're coming from and just continue striving to be the best public servants we can be in service to the same constituents.
Would this ever lead to, there's been talk in the past about the county commission trying to, absorb the duties of ECUA. Other people, sometimes talk about them moving within the Public Service Commission. I mean, those seem like big, long-term, unlikely outcomes, but you tell me, is that kind of stuff way off on the horizon, somewhat near? Is that even something we should be thinking about?
Well, if you turn it over to the county commission, what happens to all the infrastructure the city turned over for the ECUA to be created in the 80s? A good portion of their infrastructure was city-owned as well. This was really an amalgamation of multiple water services and trash services from the past. So breaking it back and giving that oversight back to the county or the city might not be the best idea, but there's just opportunities for improvement. And we have a hodgepodge system in Florida. Oversight is not uniform for all entities that service, freshwater, wastewater, biosolids, trash. I think just getting our hands wrapped around that, I'll be the first to tell you, I don't know the answers. It's really about just striving to do what's best with the information you have. So it's incumbent on us to read, to learn, to form our opinions on facts. Not jump to hyper politicized conclusions, and and just strive to be the best public servants we can be.
And look, of course, if, you know, these areas of concern have good answers and if they're willing to, you know, talk about them and provide good evidence and make changes that are necessary, then great. You know, great. We won't be having any of those conversations, and certainly we would hope for that going forward. Another thing that has come up this week, and I know you're just passionate about this issue, which is unfortunately something you have to be passionate about, but with your background in the transportation department, Skanska secured a contract in Tampa, amazingly, and now they're also asking for a $50 million, you know, sort of bailout related to Sally. How did Skanska get a contract somewhere else in the state of Florida when there's all this pending litigation here in Pensacola? How did that happen?
Well, the pending litigation is private litigation. It's not litigation over the contract that they have with DOT. You know, the folks who've really been calling to blacklist, or it's called debar, Skanska from future Florida contracts, they need to look at the Florida law and statutes on point. You know, all of the reasons to blacklist a company are geared towards their ability to perform contracts. They're still working on the job, meaning DOT believes that they can comply with the terms of their contract. They haven't lost faith in their ability to complete the job. So, due process matters. The Constitution's there to protect the folks, you know, the people potentially hate the most. You know, the Supreme Court's there to protect the minority, not the majority. So, yes, of course, we all are frustrated and angry with Skanska. I've not been satisfied with their public outreach and how they've responded to this issue, but due process still matters. The law and the rules as they are, the laws and the rules that they're following. I wish the plaintiffs nothing but the best of luck this month in their trial. I want them to be successful and, you know, take them to the cleaners. But at the same time, to blacklist them from future contracts, you have to focus on their ability to perform under that contract. And there are very few entities with the equipment, the expertise, the know-how, and the staff to complete these massive jobs. So if you want to blacklist, actually debar Skanska, you got to look at the law first, and you got to understand the process. And if that's your ultimate goal, you got to follow those rules, because those are the rules that Skanska is expected to follow.
I get all of that. I hear you. I know the way it feels to people, and I know you know this too, is here we are trying to pursue this private civil action in order to get compensation for the screw-up that they cost so many people so much money, and there the government is offering them more contracts elsewhere when we thought our piece of leverage was you're not going to be able to do business until you take care of Pensacola. And I, you know, but I understand, as you say, the law protects...
They're not offering... the state's not offering anything to Skanska. The state opened it up for public bid. The state's charged with, you know, making the best decision, awarding the bid in the best interest of the public dollar and our, you know, Florida constituents. That's why I'm confident that, you know, them getting this bid was above board. They were just the best, you know, bid proposal for that interchange down in Tampa. And it's not like Tampa has any more love for Skanska than we do. They've
right.
been going through this I-4 Ultimate project for years. So this isn't about, you know, personal animus. It's about, do they still meet the qualifications to bid on these types of projects? The answer is yes, currently. Now, when they finish this 3-mile bridge project and the DOT contract they have comes back into play, if there's disputes over that contract, if there's issues with their performance under the contract, those are the types of questions you can ask to actually blacklist somebody from the state. And believe me, I've been focused on the contract for a reason. We're due a large amount of money in liquidated damages on the contract that should go back to the Florida Transportation Trust Fund, you know, close to $10 million. That can fix a lot of potholes in Northwest Florida. That can fast track a lot of projects. So, you know, that's been my focus, those contracts.
Well, we'll look forward to the resolution of that. And I know you have been paying close attention. That's why I wanted to have you on this morning to kind of talk about this. Alex Andrade, our state representative for District 2, as always, thank you for the time and thanks for what you're doing, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Andrew.